This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. It's time for Tech Talk. With the Apple Watch launching in a month's time, 2015 is looking to be the first real year of wearable technology. Culture Pop's Matt Armitage has been looking at the implications of a world full of sensors. You've been busy.
I have been very, very busy, yes.
So, okay, are we talking about sensors or census today?
Possibly both. I think our love of sensors may actually make us take leave of our senses. And that's it, really. I set up the entire show today just to make that very, very poor pun. So that's it. Show's over. Everyone can go home. Okay, if there is anyone still out there, we have done a lot of features on wearable technology over the past few months, and we were surprised that there wasn't kind of more of it actually at this year's CES show, beyond the normal kind of fitness bangles and watches that we've become used to. Because in theory, we now have the technology to let our t-shirts analyze our sweat and tell us if we're dehydrated, or for our socks to detect if we're about to fall over. I mean, I know you laugh, but it can be done. People are developing smart socks in case people with things like Parkinson's disease are about to fall over, and it will actually tell them they're off balance.
I can never tell with you.
Yeah, no, it's true. You know, we can whack these cheap sensors, these Bluetooth or NFC chips, into more or less anything. You know, if you want a GPS locator in your kid's sneakers, no problem. Cookies that track how long they take to digest. Not sure about that one, but I'm pretty sure that, you know, it's only going to be a matter of time.
And presumably, we're talking about privacy and security of the data that all these sensors generate.
Pretty much. I mean, we've covered some of this before. For example, on some of the fitness trackers, you own the device, but not the app that actually stores the data. So in fact, a company that you have paid several hundred ringgit to own this snazzy device now actually owns the data that you generate. And some of them even charge you to get access to your own data, the historical data. They'll allow you to have a certain time period stored in the app. And then if you want access to anything from beyond that time period, they will actually charge you to send you a CSV or an Excel sheet.
Okay, you can say that this isn't something new, so why talk about it today?
The Apple Watch, of course. Apple's own app-enabled fitness tracker debuts in about a month's time. And this week they announced there would be a ridiculous solid gold version for about $17,000.
Right.
That's a cool 60,000 ringgit in today's money. It'll be about 70,000, I should think, by next week. but what hasn't grabbed so many headlines is the company's announcement of the Apple Research Kit, which is an open source platform that will allow medical bodies to build research and testing apps and invite iPhone users to take part in medical studies.
Open source,
yes.
All right. So this might sound a little far-fetched for some of our listeners. How can an app help to further medical studies?
Okay, we're not talking about testing drugs or anything like that. We're talking about things like reaction times, hearing, speech, balance, and of course, you know, good old experience. So, for example, diabetics can record their exercise regimes and compare it to their blood sugar levels to get the correlation. And these are all things that our phones record anyway. And yes, I think there is actually an app for diabetes with a bit of add-on tech that analyzes your blood sugar levels as well, too.
Okay. So, right. Have any apps been released so far?
There are five apps in this first wave. So these are part of the pilot that Apple worked with to prove the platform. These are for Parkinson's disease, breast cancer, diabetes, asthma, and heart disease. And at this point, they're designed more for sufferers of these conditions and giving researchers more information about the progressive effects of these diseases.
All right, give us a little bit more background. How can a phone app help scientists to learn more about a disease like Parkinson's? This isn't just a case of filling out questionnaires.
Well, I imagine there will be a Q&A part to some of these apps. I haven't been able to test them because at the moment they're only available in the US. But especially when it comes to recording things like diet and emotional states, you know, obviously you need to be able to record. But that's only a part of the story. We tend to forget how complicated and full of little gizmos our phones actually are. So, for example, someone with Parkinson's disease, doing simple tapping exercises on the screen of the phone, like with two fingers, can help to assess how the level of their coordination is. Or saying "ah" into the microphone can detect wavering and trembling in the voice, which is another effect, a progressive effect of the disease. And of course, there's, you know, motor skills and balance. The accelerometers, the gyroscopes can help to measure somebody suffering with the disease. It can measure their gait. And you can see how it kind of ebbs and flows on a day-to-day basis while they progress with the disease.
This might seem like a cool thing to say, but is this a marketing gimmick for Apple?
You can look at it two ways, really. Yes, it helps to show more content and uses for something like the Apple Watch. At the same time, it's not really the biggest news in the world that Apple is building a platform for medical research. Your average consumer isn't going to go, you know, whoa, I got to get me one of those. So you could also argue that Apple was using the profile of the watch launch to promote research kit and not the other way around.
Okay. So is this purely altruism from Apple? Do they get to access the data in these apps?
Apparently not. I mean, you sign up for the app and it goes straight to the researchers. It's not stored on Apple servers. But as some pundits have noticed, if it's truly open source, then why hasn't
that
it been extended to Android? Yes. So Android has 4 to 5 times the number of users that that Apple has with iOS. And the majority of the Android smartphones have the same gizmos in them as iPhones do. So there's no real reason to exclude them from something like this if it is truly open source.
So they said it's open source.
It is open source, yeah. I mean, people can take the kit, they can do what they want with it. But yeah, but obviously it's still locked into Apple's ecosystem.
And it's not open source. Now, in that case, how important a step is this for medical research?
Well, of course, it would be an even bigger step with Android on board, working with Google. The big problem for a lot of medical studies is actually in the sample size. So when you're approaching people one-to-one and getting information and feedback from them, it's tough, it's time-consuming. And studies are often geographically limited as well. So you pick an area and you call for volunteers. Yeah. And all of this can actually skew your results. Small sample sizes can result in patterns that emerge that are actually coincidental rather than symptomatic. And similarly, if you decided to do a study on, let's say, you know, mental capacity, and you chose an area where the water is unknowingly tainted with lead or mercury, your study might indicate that everybody on the planet has an IQ of 6 and can't actually peel a banana unsupervised. So, you know, you don't necessarily get a true picture. So these apps would allow people across a country or even beyond one country to take part in medical tests. Of course, you know, some people might try and cheat the test, but again, the greater the number of people you have, the less likely it is that a single individual can do much harm to the overall data set.
Okay, what about the ethical issues?
Well, yeah, I mean, we covered the data issues a little bit, and the research bodies themselves have to be upfront about whether they're sharing your information with any institutions outside the study. What's yet to be determined is whether pharmaceutical companies can submit their own apps for inclusion under the research kit banner, because they would effectively be profiting from you giving them free information. And that's not to say that what universities work on, you know, often that ends up patented and in commercial hands as well. Where there are big issues are around age. You know, you need parental consent to take part in studies if you're below the legal age. And that kind of thing is easy to spoof on a phone or on the web. In a face-to-face study, you'd probably have to show a passport, a driving license, or a similar photo ID, whereas journalists have been able to put in various ages and still get through these processes. Like, for example, one guy originally said he was 16. And then the app said, you're too young to be in it. So he just simply went back a couple of steps and changed his age to 18, and it let him in.
Right.
You know, so that step, that proof of consent needs to be a little bit higher. And then there's the issue of informed consent. It's not enough to say yes to taking part in a medical study. You have to prove that you understand the potential consequences of taking part. And that's difficult on an app because, you know, different people have a different level of understanding. And again, it's only really face-to-face during a Q&A session that you get a sense of whether somebody actually understands the implications of what they're doing, especially if they have an IQ of 6 and can't peel a banana. And of course, you know, you can't do a one-to-one Q&A with an app, and these aren't the kind of questions you can expect Siri to be able to answer either. So, you know, you need that human level of involvement.
Okay. Now, assuming we iron out the kinks and this becomes commonplace, what's your ultimate nightmare scenario for this kind of harmony?
Ending with doom and gloom, my favourite part. No, I mean, at the moment we're talking about voluntary studies, but what about a future where your phone or whatever implant has replaced your phone is actually constantly monitoring all of your vitals?
Right.
So your medical insurance provider might make it a condition of coverage that you be monitored 24 hours a day and with all the data being sent back to their servers. So, for example, if you forgot to take the last pill of a course of antibiotics, the insurer might be able to deny a claim for some future infection that you get. Or it might say that you developed diabetes because you didn't exercise enough. So, again, it won't cover you under the policy. And again, evil governments could do the same with health services. Your phone could be transformed from this kind of communication tool into basically a set of health handcuffs. And obviously, that's got real kind of implications from a civil liberties point of view.
Mm. That's really quite logical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you for once. Talking sense for the first time on BFM in many years.
We'll be joined by another sensible person, Joseph Handu, right after this in Tech Talk. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.